Welcome to The Ralph Report with Ralph Garman.
Hey there, boys and girls. Welcome to The Ralph Report for a Thursday. It is May 17th. So glad to have you with me today. As always, thanks for checking in and spending some time with me here at The Ralph Report. Good show today. I think it's really going to be fun. Got some interesting stuff. We have another member of the Garmy later on in the show who has a fascinating job. I think you're going to like it. This is a real cool new feature that we got going on where members of the Garmy who have interesting or informative jobs come on board and we talk about it. We've done it off and on for a while. We've had people in the mental health field. We've had people in the banking field, but that's been sort of like general topic, general information segments. These are very specific. We talked to a guy named Tommy Sides, and his business was, he was the guy for a long time who took your luggage when you left it there at the airport, and he got it into the airplane and got it back to you. And I always wondered how that worked, and then we found out because Tommy Bags stopped by. We talked to Tommy Bags. Well, we have another member of the Garmy today who is, he's got a job that I bet you've never met somebody who has this job. You've known about this job your whole life, but you've never met somebody who actually did it. I'll leave it at that. So we'll talk to Nathan Moore is his name. We'll talk to him later on in the show. Of course, it's Thursday. That means Ralph Sex University. Interesting topic today, furries. We'll be talking about the furries. And of course, all the entertainment news in just a few seconds with the showbiz beat. But I wanted to talk about this first. It caught my eye this morning and I couldn't resist the topic. Because if you know anything about me, you know how much I balk at bullshit names, fucked up names, names that people have given their children or names that people have given themselves that are just big look at me's. I always feel that if you name your kid for Micah, it's because you're making up for something. You are so desperately insecure or desperate for attention that you're going to name your child Artichoke or Cinderblock or whatever bullshit name you're going to give your kid. It's because, A, you are desperate for attention and you're hoping some of the reflected attention your child will get because of its fucked up name will rub off on you. Or you think naming your kid something unique is automatically going to guarantee that kid a special life. Neither of those could be further from the truth. One, it reflects poorly on your job as a parent when you saddle your kid with a name like Patchouli. And look at all the people in the world. Look at all the Daves and the Bills and the Jims and the Steves and the Marys and the Susans who have crushed it for hundreds of years, who have just done amazing things, been remarkable people with very standard names. So a name, a rose by any other name, as the bard said, would still smell as sweet. So it really is irrelevant. It's a much ado about nothing. Well, I'm doing a lot of Shakespeare references today. Couldn't help but notice this article. Of the top 10 baby names of 2017, the Social Security Administration has released the top 10 most popular baby names of 2017 for men. Well, not men, but for boys and for girls. And this is all you need to know. By and large, they're all fine. In fact, a lot of old school names are kind of getting recycled, which I'm all for. But then we'll get into the up-and-coming names, the fastest rising names, and that's where I have some problems. But let's take a look at what people are naming their kids. And as you can imagine, Social Security Administration knows, because you got to register your kids so they get a Social Security card here in the States, and that's how that works. By the way, I thought this was interesting. A little aside. Michael. Michael fell out of the top 10 for the first time since the Second World War. People are not calling their kids Michael. I always liked Michael. Mike. Mikey. Mike's a guy you can trust. I like Mike. My bike likes Mike. But he did not make the top 10. Here you go. Most popular girls' names. Number 10, Abigail. Abigail is like a Revolutionary War era name, right? I always think of Abigail Adams. John Adams' wife. Wasn't that his wife? I don't know. Anyway, Abigail. It's an oldie. It's an oldie, but a goodie. Same with number 9, Evelyn. Evelyn. Not a lot of young Evelyns, but there are now. Number 8, Amelia. Amelia's a pretty name. 7, Charlotte. 6, Mia. 5, Sophia. Some ethnicity to these names. I like it. 4, Isabella. Hey, Isabella and Sophia and Mia, you all come over. You have some linguine and a clam sauce. It's so good. You're going to slap your mama. It's so good. Ava was 3rd. 2, I'm a little partial to, got to say, Olivia. Olivia was 2, the name of my precious little thing. By the way, my wife was not influenced by any of these lists. That was something she wanted to name her baby girl since she was a little girl. So we knew going in what our daughter's name was going to be. My son, Lincoln, who passed away, they were twins. Olivia and Lincoln were twins. Lincoln passed away at 10 days. Lincoln, I got to name Lincoln. He was mine. And so we both made that deal. But Olivia was predestined. We knew from the moment we decided we were going to have a family what our daughter was going to be named. That was 2, just edged out at 1 by Emma. Emma, most popular name in America for baby girls in 2017. When it came to the fellas, Jacob. Well, can't get any better than a good old biblical name, right? Jacob at 10, Oliver at 9, Elijah at 8, Mason at 7, Mason's a cool name, Benjamin, 6, Benjamin making a comeback, by the way. Benjamin had been out of the loop for a while. Logan is the only sort of new agey hipster millennial name in the batch of the top 10. Logan, you know, Wolverine is Logan for a boy. James, good old James, William. Man, I'm nice to see some traditional standard names making a comeback this year. 3rd was William. Noah was 2nd. And Liam, 1. Liam, you're hoping your kid's got a big dong if you're naming him Liam because of Liam Neeson, right? That's what you're figuring. So those were the top 10 most popular girls and boys' names in America for 2017. Now we get to some bullshit. Now we're going to trot out the fucked up names in the top 5 fastest rising names for boys and girls. That means they're not the most popular. Not a lot of people are using them, but enough people are using them that it's causing a blip on the screen. It's causing people to notice. Here are your top 5 fastest rising names for boys. I want to slap these people. I'm already laughing. 5, Coulson. Coulson. Hi, I'm Coulson. Unless you're Clark Gregg and you're an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., I don't want to hear your name is Coulson. Your first name is Coulson. It's not a first name. It's a last name. 4, fastest rising names for boys. I'm sorry. 4 is Nova. Nova. This is for a boy. If you name your kid after an old model of Chevy, you failed as a parent. Nova, by the way, was the mute girlfriend to Charlton Heston in Planet of the Apes. Nova. Nova is not a name for a boy. Stop it. I'm not fucking around. Stop it, parents of Nova. 3, Caspian. Man, it just gets worse. Caspian was 3rd. 2, Cairo with a K. Fuck. As if Cairo with a C wouldn't be bad enough. Unless, of course, you are Egyptian and that's where you were conceived. Cairo with a K. You will be explaining that away for the rest of your life. And 1, Wells. Wells, that's okay. It's not okay. It's fine. It's acceptable. Wells. But Cairo, Caspian, Nova, and Coulson, they got some problems. Nova, man, that busted me up, as you could tell. 5 fastest rising names for girls. You're not going to believe this. 5, Melania. Well, we know what parts of the country she's being named, Melania. 4 is Oakland. Not Oakland, as in California, where the Raiders play, but Oakland, O-A-K-L-Y-N, Oakland. Not a name. Maybe a name of a town, barely, but not a name for a little girl. Oakland, you're just making shit up now. Number three. Dream for a girl. You're fucking desperate. You are dooming her to a life on the pole if you name her Dream. That is fucked up. What is that? A Kardashian name? Dream? One of the Kardashians named Dream? For whatever reason, I don't care. Naming your child Dream when she's a girl ensures that she will be working at your town's local strip club. What's it called? Fantasy Island? Whatever it's called. She's going to be working it, and not even the good shift. Not the late night weekend shift. She's going to be working the legs and eggs breakfast specials during the week. Everybody, Dream making her way to stage number two. Everybody put your heads together for Dream. Get your dollar bills out for Dream. Number two, Oakland again. I shit you not. Oakland is on the list again, but this time it's O-A-K-L-Y-N-N. Two N's. Oakland made the list twice. It was shitty enough to make the top five fastest rising names list twice for girls. And number one, Ensley. E-N-S-L-E-Y. Oh, my Lord. Stop it. You're not making your child special by naming her Dream or Oakland with any number of N's. You could put four N's at the end of it. It's not going to matter. And Ensley, not a name. Ensley sounds like a clinic where people get their hair restored. And Ensley, the Ensley Center is a place you go for vaginal rejuvenation surgery. Ensley is not a name. Cut it out. Oh, boy, that was fun. Okay, so those are the, that's the baby name news for 2017. There you go. Now, what do you say we get to all the entertainment news with a segment that I like to call the Showbiz Beat. Every day I get more and more sympathy for actresses working in the entertainment business. It is brutal what they have to go through. Jennifer Love Hewitt felt compelled to have to apologize for how she looked on a red carpet this week. She was in New York doing what they call the upfronts for the Fox network. The upfronts, if you aren't familiar, is when stars of the new fall season, primarily the fall shows, show up and they parade like dancing monkeys in front of the advertisers, and they press the flesh and they're up on stage and they're introduced, and it's a big attempt for the networks to woo advertisers to put commercials in their new shows or returning shows or what have you. They unveil their lineup for the upcoming year. And so she was there in New York City, and she's in a new show called 911, which was on this season, but Connie Britton, who was in the show, is leaving the show. Connie Britton does not like to work, apparently. She left Nashville. She's leaving this show after one season. She's coming in to replace her. And so she was on the red carpet, and she said that she apologized for looking like a hot mess. She said, "We go to the upfront yesterday and nobody tells me the day is going to be like 12 hours long and the humidity is going to be almost 100% in New York City. So I just have to apologize. Wearing a black suit, not a good idea. Not wearing enough hairspray and teasing in my hair, also a bad idea. I have to apologize for how wrecked I look in all the pictures that have come out." She, by the way, looks hot in those pictures. Like real person hot. Not fake television hot, but she looks like an enormously attractive, sexy woman, and she looks fine. And the fact that she saw those photos and panicked and had to release a press release apologizing for how she looked because it was stinking hot and brutal in New York City, and she was in a black suit and she was melting like anybody would, that is tragic to me. I feel so bad for her. So anyway, I'm gonna watch that show now just to make it up to her. No, I shouldn't actually. I should punish Fox for making her feel bad about herself. I don't know how I'm going to make it up to Jennifer Love Hewitt, but I'll find a way. From a good lady to a bad lady, Kris Jenner is in the news. She did an interview this week where she says, if you cross her or any of the other Kardashians, she will sue you. She doesn't care if you're broke or not. This woman is a shit tower. She's a pile of garbage. I firmly believe someday historians will look back and find the Kardashian family as ground zero for when America started to crumble. You know how when they dictate what happened with the Greek societies and the Roman societies when those great empires fell to rubble, what the cause behind it was? I'm sure that historians will find it's the Kardashians for this ruination of America. Anyway, she said that she found out that someone in her employ was trying to take pictures of her daughter because she was pregnant. Oh, fuck. Who could care? And she said, regarding this person who worked for them, who may or may not have taken these pictures, we obviously will go to and spare no expense to hold somebody accountable if that happens on our team. Is that even fucking English? I don't care how much money somebody might have, if they have nothing. Some people think, oh, I don't have any money, and they're not going to sue me. Well, we'll take payments. We'll garner those wages for, you know, the next 10 years. It's garnish, you dumb garbage person. The Kardashian family is the trashiest of white trash. Without the money that was left them by the successful lawyer, Rob Kardashian, who once again supported OJ, let's not forget that. If they lived in a trailer park, you'd look at these people and say, look at them having these babies out of wedlock and these disastrous marriages and these nightmare stories coming out. They live like losers in the swamps somewhere. I think that name story this morning has got me in an ornery mood because I don't like this either. It's been announced that they are making another superhero prequel series. This time it's going to be on Epix. The people who brought you Gotham. Now, Gotham, of course, was the prequel story before Batman, how Batman came to be, mostly focusing on young Commissioner Gordon, James Gordon as a cop in Gotham City. Very successful show on Fox. I enjoyed it. But not every character needs a prequel series. It's run amok. Now, we've got Gotham. That was the first. Well, I guess Smallville was the first one, right? Superman as a boy living in his hometown. How he came to be. There was Smallville, and then there was Gotham. Then there was Krypton, the story of the planet Krypton before Superman's parents were born. Now this series is called Pennyworth, and it's a prequel focusing on the early life of Bruce Wayne's butler, Alfred. It's young Alfred. Not every ancillary character in the Batman mythology needs their own prequel series. I don't need young Chief O'Hara coming to a TV near me this fall. Stop it. Stop it. Let's take a look at some good news, some music news. Tenacious D is going out on the road. Jack Black and my buddy Kyle Gass have announced they are going to tour this summer. They've got a new album out due very soon, Jack Black says. Meanwhile, they've got a bunch of concert appearances coming up, starting with a June 16th appearance at the Montebello Rockfest in Quebec. And then they're going to be in San Bernardino, California, Brooklyn, New York, Chicago. Tickets go on sale for this Tenacious D tour tomorrow. So if you're a fan, get yourself to a Ticketmaster or wherever they're selling these tickets. And you can get them on sale Friday if you're a fan. Speaking of Tenacious D, they are also going to be performing at Cal Jam 18 this year. Cal Jam is the great festival they do. They're at the Glen Helen Regional Park and Festival Grounds in San Bernardino, California. October 5th and 6th are the dates for the show this year. Foo Fighters, once again, headlining Cal Jam this year. Dave and the guys, of course, they are the powers behind the Cal Jam, and they booked some great acts this year. Man, I might have to go. Of course, as I mentioned, Foo Fighters headlining. Then you got Tenacious D, Billy Idol, Iggy Pop, Garbage, Greta Van Fleet, Silver Sun Pickups, and others. So if you want more details, tickets go on sale today, by the way. Today at 10 a.m. Pacific time. So if you're interested and you want more details or to get tickets, you can go to caljamfest.com/tickets. More music news. You remember Strawberry Fields Forever, of course, right? Legendary Beatles song.
Let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to Strawberry Fields. Nothing is real, and nothing to get hung about. Strawberry Fields Forever.
Well, that song is based on an actual place. In Liverpool.
That's right, Strawberry Fields. It's where I used to play with the kids at the orphanage there, the Salvation Army Orphanage.
John Lennon used to hang out there and play with the kids. And so now to raise money, the Salvation Army is selling merch from the real Strawberry Fields there in Liverpool. You can get t-shirts and whatnot, but the real cool item that you can get are actual bricks from the playground where John Lennon played as a young man. They've taken the bricks, they've cleaned them up, they put them in a numbered box with a hologram. It's all official and authenticated. So you can buy up to four bricks. That's your limit. You can only get four bricks from Strawberry Fields at $100 a pop. So four bricks for $400. And they're just bricks, don't get me wrong. I've taken a look at the website, and they're just bricks. But if you're a Beatles fan, this may be for you. You can check it out at the store. It's the website is store.strawberryfieldliverpool.com. Store.strawberryfieldliverpool.com. If you're a Beatles fan, check it out. And while we're talking about things British, well, I feel like Steve Ashton for a moment. It turns out the Spice Girls will not be performing at the royal wedding. We know this because not all of them are invited. A source is telling the New York Post that only Victoria, Emma, and Jerry were invited. So that is Posh, Baby, and Ginger Spice. They were the only ones invited, so the Spice Girls were never going to perform. Mel B, this source says, will be back at home in Los Angeles, was never in fact invited, nor was Mel C. So, looks like no Spice Girls performance at the royal wedding, which Steve Ashton will be happy about, but crushes me because I love me some Spice Girls. And even more British news. Adele, while we're talking about music, Adele has been talking to the producers of a new big-budget film version of the legendary musical Oliver. I played Fagin, by the way, in Oliver, one of my first musical roles. Have been talking to Adele to play the role of Nancy, the big female lead in that show. But here's the trick, and I'm surprised by this. They're asking her to audition for the role because they don't know if she can act or not. So she has to show off her acting chops in a series of auditions before they will talk to her about the role. I say, come on. It's Adele. What are you, an idiot? Just cast her. Worst case scenario is she can't act. She can sing. And a lot of that show is singing. And it's Adele in a movie. People will go to see her just because she's Adele. So I'll keep you posted whether she gets it or not. But if Adele has to audition for movies, no wonder I can't get a break in Hollywood. If they're making Adele audition for stuff, I shouldn't even be in this business anymore. Let's take a look at this day and see what celebrities were born on May 17th. Actor-comedian Bob Saget, fellow Philadelphians, by the way. Bob Saget, 62 years old today. Craig Ferguson from The Drew Carey Show, The Late Late Show, 56 years old. Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails is 53. Jordan Knight of New Kids on the Block is 48. Wow, one of the new kids is 48? At what point do you stop being a new kid on the block? Just become a new middle-aged dude on the block. Derek Hough from Dancing with the Stars, he's 33 years old today. And actress Nikki Reed from Twilight celebrates her 30th birthday. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat. I got to tell you, you guys are the best. I am getting such a kick out of everyone sending in their emails talking about their jobs because we have sort of opened up this new segment where we talk to members of the Garmy who have interesting lines of work that you can share details about with the rest of us. And it really is interesting. We talked to Tommy Bagsides about his work as a luggage and baggage handler for the airlines. He told me stuff I never knew. Now we've got one today, Nathan Moore, who is from Canada, and he is a cop. I'll tell you that right now, but that's not the most interesting part of his work. It's fascinating what he does, and I'm so glad that he reached out and we were able to get together and have this conversation because I think you too will find it just as interesting. Here is my conversation with Nathan Moore. Nathan, can you tell everybody what you do for a living?
Well, I am a member of the RCMP, so the Royal Canadian Mounted Police here in Canada, for about 11 years. Specifically, I'm a general duty cop, but I also am a composite sketch artist.
So you are a Mountie. You're actually a cop.
Yep.
But you also are a police sketch artist.
I am, yes. You betcha.
And I've always wanted to know about that line of work because we've all seen those moments in the movies where they bring in the sketch artist to talk to the witness and they come up with a composite sketch that they then send out on the streets to hunt down the bad guys. Tell me about that experience. How did you first get involved in being a sketch artist?
Sure. Basically, like out of high school, I could draw. And so that's kind of something that's interested me. when I got into the force. And every so often through our division, we have emails that have come out where they advertise courses that are available. And there's a company that comes out of the States, out of Idaho, and that's what they do, is they teach how to be a sketch artist in a like week-long courses. So the first time I put in, you had to submit three drawings that showed how good of an artist you are, and they said my art sucks. So I I got denied. And then the funny thing is, a couple years later, I submitted again, but I was actually off on medical leave. I'd just gotten snipped. And so I was sitting at home on painkillers, and sure enough, did some drawings then. And they said, yeah, your art's good. Now you can do it. And so I was like, I guess I got to be stoned to do it. So, so then basically from then on, it's roughly a week long course every year. And it just improves your art and kind of moves you along as to how quickly you can draw. And then I spent 2 weeks in Ottawa on a course as well, kind of the same sort of thing, but from a Canadian point of view. And then that's pretty much it. Just draw whenever I get called from surrounding detachments, strictly for the RCMP, not so much for like city forces. And yeah, it's actually a lot easier than you might expect. Do you want like the lowdown as to how I do it, or?
Well, I would love to know what the process is like. Does it happen like it does in the movies, where they'll have an eyewitness come in to be testifying about something they saw regarding a case, and they will bring you in to help them get an image of a perpetrator?
Yeah. Basically it starts off with the general complaint. So whatever it might be, whether it's an assault or a rape or even a murder, we run the gamut. I've pretty much done a drawing on everything. So we'll have the witness give the investigator an interview first, and they'll just give the lowdown as to what happened. Then I'll come in afterwards and do it myself as well, just like the Reader's Digest version of what happened. And then get the basic tombstone information as to what happened. And then we'll actually have them flip through an FBI mugshot book. And it's really hard to draw a picture without some sort of frame of reference. Like it's hard for somebody to explain. Like if you were to explain what your wife looked like to somebody, it's hard to explain those shapes. But you could pick out features from a book, that's much easier. And so they just flip through, find what matches closest to what they recall. And then we'll lay it down. I'll adjust it as they see fit. And then basically, for me, I'm a pretty quick drawer, so it takes about an hour to an hour and a half. And then they'll rate the image as to how close it is to what they remember. And that's pretty much it. So then from there, generally, we send it out to either the newspaper or to surrounding detachments or police forces. And if they can come up with somebody, then they will. We never want the picture to look exactly like a portrait, and it's not supposed to. It's more along the lines of a caricature. Mm-hmm. And so it's those features that'll stand out. And basically it's for the average person to take a look at it and say that, you know, that kind of reminds me of so-and-so. And then from there, we'll do a photo lineup, which is like the movies, but instead of having people stand up, it's a bunch of photos.
Right.
Then we move on with our investigation from there. So yeah, that's kind of the nutshell. That's basically how I do it.
Well, I've always thought when I would see these moments in television shows or movies, that first of all, I would think that eyewitness testimony is already shaky at best, kind of unreliable, because it's happening in the moment, your emotions are running high, your adrenaline's pumping, and then whatever recollection you have is probably not as reliable as, say, a photograph or video evidence. And then you take it and you filter it through an artist like yourself, who's doing the best they can to reproduce something that they've never seen. Are these renderings ever really effective in finding people? Have you had cases cleared because of artwork that you've done?
We've actually had them both ways. One good example that we had was just out on the main highway, on the Trans-Canada Highway. We had a firefighter that was off duty, and he went to go underneath the overpass, came across two guys that were taking a bat to another guy. So from about the 6 or 7 seconds that he witnessed this happen before he threw her in reverse and got out of there, think of it like it's burning the image into your mind. Like it's that stressful situation is what really cements it in your head. And so that's, once we put it all together, we'll kind of gauge how he reacts to the picture. Mm-hmm. So if there's some kind of an emotional response or he rates it a certain way, then that tells me that it's something that's close to what he remembers. But in that specific case, the picture that we had looked very much like the suspect that we were looking for. So from then we managed to catch the guys, and it was actually two guys. They ended up going to jail for it. So
oh, that's great.
For sure. So for the most part, it's pretty good. It's actually good as well to do this this whole thing to tell if somebody's lying or not about whatever the case may be. A lot of times it's actually the interview process itself that'll rule out whether or not they're telling the truth. I actually was lucky enough to get on a course where it used to be called interview and interrogation, but they changed it to something a little nicer. And so when you're talking to somebody face to face, you're kind of listening more for the details of the story. It's great with my kids because I can break down whether or not they're telling me the truth or not. So
put them under one of those big lamps in a room and bring in your wife as the good cop or bad cop when you guys go at it?
You know, my wife puts an end to it for the most part because she doesn't want me interrogating the kids. A lot of times when we actually took the course, they actually tell you don't use these techniques on friends or family because you won't have any friends or family afterwards. So it's a lot of it's just asking the right questions and listening to how they answer. And then, you know, you can get them to tell you back the story in other ways. And depending how much detail they vary up, you can get a good sense of whether or not they're lying to you or not.
Wow.
So, and then, you know, you can actually go through the whole process of drawing a picture, but instead of picking what these, like what the kids or whoever is giving you for information, you draw something else. And then as long as you cement them to it, then you know whether or not they're telling you the truth. So, it's been effective a couple times to rule out for, you know, when a kid will say that somebody's tried to abduct them, and then you just ask them a lot of details. And if they're giving way more details than the normal person should be able to recall, then you know something's wrong then. So That's the reason why we use police officers as opposed to like independent contractors to do it. Because I can actually arrest for, we call it public mischief, but for lying to the police. So if the case may be, it's rare that we'll do it. We don't tend to charge, but we'll find out what the reason is for them lying. So, yeah.
Gotcha. What do you do to keep your skills up? Because I'm assuming you don't use this all that often, but you have to be able to when the need arises, right?
Yeah, it depends on the year. We actually got a couple of new guys in our division, like in the province trained. So my drawings have actually gone down a little bit. I was doing 44, 45 drawings a year, which keeps you pretty busy. Wow. For just the drawing part, it's just kind of doodling around the house or fixing my kids' drawings for school when they draw something for a project. Like that looks nothing like a cat. I'm going to have to draw that for you. So it's another thing where my wife keeps me in check because I shouldn't be fixing a grade tour's drawings for her. But just that kind of thing. And then as a general police officer, we talk to a lot of people. So, you know, it's just a lot of talking. That's the best tool as far as I'm concerned. So
now I have to know, as a Mountie, do you wear the red coat and the hat and the whole nine yards?
No, to be honest, we hate wearing that one because it's super uncomfortable. When you wear it in the summer, it's way too hot. And when you wear it in the winter, it's way too cold. So, and I've never had worse blisters than when you're wearing those high brown boots. So we wear it sparingly, like usually special events and stuff. Next month for a graduation for one of the high schools, I have it. But for the most part, no, we try not to if you don't have to.
Gotcha. Well, sure. Nathan, this has been fascinating, and I'm so glad to get a look behind the scenes at a profession I've always had questions about, and you were kind enough to spend some time with me today and do that, and I really appreciate it, man. Thank you.
Absolutely. No, any way I can help, I'd love to.
A police sketch artist. A Mountie police sketch artist. How awesome is that? I didn't think of a name for him at the end of that conversation. I got to come up with something. I'm thinking of calling this segment like the job mob, so I can give everybody like one of those Goodfellas types mob nicknames. Like we had Tommy Bags. He was the baggage handler guy. I think this is going to be Natty Pencils. Natty Pencils. Nathan Moore, a.k.a. Natty Pencils. Because that's what he does. He uses pencils. Anyway, if you have an interesting job or you think you have an interesting job, because frankly, I will be the judge of that. But if you think your job is interesting and you'd like to share the details with the rest of the Garmy, feel free. Send me an email at ralph@theralphreport.com. Let me know what you do and what you'd like to talk about and what you think you have to share with the rest of us. And I'll be in touch. We'll see if we can put you
in the job mob. I think that's going to stick because I like it. You'll be part of the Ralph Report job mob, along with Tommy Bags and Natty Pencils. All right, it is Thursday. That means it's time for Ralph's Sex University.
You don't know what to do. There's one man to help you through. He's a graduate of Sex U. Some will come loudly.
Usually on Sex University, the purpose of it for me is to try to normalize or at least educate folks at some sexual proclivity or some sexual interest or some sexual fetish or paraphilia that some people might think is odd. To take that lifestyle and to expose it and normalize it and talk to folks who engage in it and let you know that whatever it is that turns you on, it's all okay. As long as it's consensual and doesn't hurt anybody, it's all okay. That's usually why we do the Sex University segment. However, today, I have to use my powers in Sex University to debunk what is thought of as a sexual lifestyle, which is thought of as a fetish or paraphilia, which in reality isn't one at all. I received several emails over the past couple weeks from people who have curiosities about furries. Furries, as you know, are famously believed to be people who like to have sex while dressed up in animal costumes. You know, like those mascot costumes you see at college football games or professional sports, they have these mascots, and people dress up in these costumes, and they have these conventions, and the story seems to have become, to the general public, that these people are like swingers, and they're banging each other in the costumes, and that's their sexual turn-on, when in reality, that isn't what furries is at all. And I'm glad I had a chance to get those emails from people who had curiosities about it to put this to rest, this rumor that being a furry is somehow a sexual thing. Now, don't get me wrong. There is a small subset of people who enjoy this activity that do sexualize it, but they are truly the minority here. So if it's not a sexual kink, what exactly is a furry? Well, I'm glad you asked. Furries are basically fans of anthropomorphic animals. Now, an anthropomorphic animal is an animal that walks, talks, and otherwise does human-type things. Think, for example, the cartoons we all grew up on watching as a kid. Mickey Mouse, Bugs Bunny, movies like Zootopia, where there are animals doing human-like things. Furries are people who get off, and I use that in a non-sexual term, they are fans of those types of animals. They love the art, they love the thought of it. They love hanging around other people who enjoy it. There's music, there's video games, there's all kinds of expression for people who enjoy animals who act like human beings. Now, is there a sexual aspect of it? A very small sliver. So when you see these giant conventions of people getting together to celebrate the fact that they're furries, just think of it the way you would a Star Trek convention. Or a comic book convention, Comic-Con down in San Diego. That's what furries are doing. They're just getting together to share their mutual interest in this kind of art and these kinds of animals and fictional tales, and that's their thing. And at these conventions, you'd be surprised, only about 25% express their interest in anthropomorphic animals by costuming, as they call it, by dressing up. So the people that you see running around in the costumes, that's usually only about a quarter of the people who are actually into this stuff at any one gathering. Then you have to realize how small the percentage is of furries who obtain sexual gratification from wearing these mascot-style fursuits. Most of them do it to be in touch with a feeling of their childhood, where it was a simpler time, or to sublimate their own personality and let another personality take over. It's not unlike the cosplayers you see at comic book conventions or science fiction conventions. Instead of dressing up as Captain Kirk or as Deadpool, they're dressing up as a fox or a cat. Here's a little piece from a National Geographic documentary about a guy who dresses up as a cat and what it does for him personally, the reason he does it. You'll find it's not sexual at all. It has to do with his self-confidence.
Putting on the full fursuit for Nuko is it's unbelievable. When I'm Courtney, I'm shy, I'm nervous. I don't like having a lot of attention on me. Courtney is the stressed out grad student trying to work on a PhD. I prefer being Nuka. He's mischievous and playful and silly. And when I'm in my persona, I don't mind people looking at me. I'm okay with being the center of attention. I don't feel so embarrassed to have everyone's eyes on me. If I got a pair of ears and a tail on, or if I'm wearing my collar, or if I'm in the mindset of Nuka, I'll run out to a group of people and be really enthusiastic. I engage with people a lot more.
Yes, you did hear the phrase fursona in there, and that's what furries call these avatars they make for themselves of an animal that is anthropomorphic, that has human characteristics. They create this other persona or fursona, and that's how they relate to other furries at these events. Now, where did the reputation for furries being these sex perverts who like to have sex dressed up as a mascot, where does it come from? Well, it might be because furry fandom is primarily from the LGBTQ community. Furries are 7 times more likely than the general population to identify as transgender, about 5 times more likely to identify as non-heterosexual. So it is primarily white males in their teens to mid-20s, and many of them are transgender or gay. And so maybe that's where the misconception widely held by the general population was, that furries is somehow strictly a sex activity, like a swingers party in animal suits. That is actually not the case. Now, there are sexual fetishes and paraphilias involving stuffed animals, but those people are called plushies. And sometimes those two are lumped together, and maybe that's why the misconception also is around in the general population. But I wanted to do my part today to kind of diffuse that image that furries have. For the most part, they're just regular folks who have a fandom, and they get together for these events, and some of them dress up, but they're really no different than the folks you see at Comic-Cons or science fiction conventions. And frankly, and there's probably a lot more sex going on at those than there is at the furry conventions. So there you go. That's our exploration of furries and fursonas today here at Ralph Sex University. Well, that's it for today's show. Thanks so much for stopping by and spending some time with me here at the Ralph Report. Another reminder, real quick, for the 3- and 4-star generals, don't forget Sunday at noon Pacific time, we're having our live stream video event. Circle your calendars. Love to have you show up for that. I'll be sending you out a notice later on today to give you all the details. Tomorrow's show, jam-packed. I don't know how we're going to have time for all of it. We've got the new movies, of course, coming out in theaters this weekend with the Movie Beat. We'll have showbiz news. Steve Ashton, our UK correspondent, will be dropping by. And we have 2 special guests that will be dropping by. Brad Meltzer, amazing author Brad Meltzer, talking about his new book. And just in, hopefully, this is going to come through. Ming-Na Wen from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. will be on the show tomorrow talking about the season finale tomorrow night of that television program. As I mentioned, a ton of stuff. We're going to try to get to it all in tomorrow's Ralph Report. So come on back. You're not going to want to miss this one. I love you. I mean it. Bye.